In this week's Sedra, Moshe tells us, God says, when you come to the land, when you come to the land of that I'm going to give you, don't learn from the nations who are there, who practice sorcery and divination and necromancy, and there's a long list. You know, there was the worship of the Molech, where you'd had to put your child into the fire. And the Torah tells us, don't do any of those things, because they're an abomination. And it's because of those things that God has rejected those people and is driving them out of the land and giving you the land. Then the Torah says, Tomim tia im Hashem lekecho. Be tamim with God. So tamim has the root tam. We encounter tam in the Haggadah, one of the four sons, the Chochem, the Rosha, the tam. The Torah tells us that Yaakov ish tam. What does tam mean? So there's differences of opinions, and the most normally accepted one is Rashi, which is be straightforward. Be wholehearted. Don't be asking about the future. Accept with grace everything that happens to you. In other words, Rashi sees the context of this verse amongst other verses, that their practices were mostly trying to control the future, to divine the future, to find out what's in store, and then to try and control it through the use of sorcery or the oracles and necromancy and magic of various kinds. So Rashi says, be mekabel, just accept what is happening, and don't be living in the future, and I guess don't be resentful of the past. The first time we encounter the word tamim is in Parshas Noach, where it says tamim Noach ish tzadik. Ela toldes Noach, these are the chronicles of Noach. Noach ish tzadik. Noach is a righteous man. Tamim hoyo b'doy roisov. He was tamim in his generation. The next time we encounter tamim, God says to Avram, Haloich lefonai b'heyeh samim. Walk before me, be tamim, and this is what I need you to do. I need you to circumcise yourself and every male in your household. So there is something about the covenant, the Brit, the Tzaddik, the sixth Sephira, that of Yesod, which is associated with tamim. The next time we encounter tamim, Moshe Rabbeinu is telling us to take a Seh Tamim, a perfect lamb for the offering, for the Pesach offering. So, what does it mean here? The Targum of Onkelos, the Aramaic translation of the Torah here on the page, says Shlim Tehe. Shlim, which is, you know, has the root shalom or shalem, meaning wholeness. And so if you translate tamim as whole, then you would translate as shlim as being, yeah, whole. I guess some kind of integrity, is some kind of a disingenuousness. There's an interesting Bahir, the Sefer Bahir, which is one of the earliest Kabbalah's texts, which talks about this idea, and he understands the word shlim as being shalom, be at peace with God. Tamim tia im Hashem lekecho, be at peace. The Eishbitzer has another reading, or perhaps it's possible to integrate this reading together with the previous ones. Tamim tia im Hashem lekecho b'gemara nedorim. We learn in the Gemara nedorim, kol hatamim, anybody who is tamim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitamim imoy. Then, you know, we have the concept of midah for midah, measure for measure. That the way you act in the universe, that is the way the universe acts with you. And the way you treat people, that's the way people treat you. And the way you are with God, that is the way that God is with you. So the Ishbitzer says, and be'im ha'odam oivid Hashem yisbarach, if a person worships, ve'im l'shem yisparis mizeh, and a person doesn't take anything from the worship, either glory or self-aggrandizement or any kind of patting themselves on the back because he's a God worshipper. Like it's a bit pshitas, but a person worships God because Machashu Nivra, since I was created and God's my creator, Mamela Tzarech loved. You know, if it's as simple as that, God's my creator, God's the creator, created everything, so you know, my job is to worship. There's nothing else for me to do. If it's as simple as that, if that is the meaning of tamimus, simplicity, then gam Hashem yisbarach mitamim imoy, then God acts the same way. God doesn't say, well, I'm doing this for you because, and then therefore you know, I'm going to charge you this much against your virtues and mitzvot, and, you know, the food that you're eating this year is, you know, on account of the, you know, that. Like, if we act in relationship to God that worshipping is the most natural thing, then God in return just pours his abundance on us as though that is the most natural thing. Well, I'm the creator, you're the created, I'm taking care of you, you know, like you're my creation. So the Ishbitzer sees in Tomim an anti-intellectual worship of God, which, you know, if we look at, if then we take that in back into the context of the verses of the chapter, then what God is commanding us against is intellectualizing our worship of God. And that's the toiva, that's the abomination. And the way that we relate to God, if we relate to God as the most, you know, it's just natural to worship, that not to worship God is unnatural, then in a sense, you know, worship has to be childlike. And then the Ishbitzer says, you know, if we act that way to God, then God acts like a parent, you know, like, you know, a child doesn't have to earn its keep. Like, I'm the parent, you know, it's my job to take care of you, to provide. You know, so if we act in that way, then God acts in that way to us, and that's the meaning of Tomim. And when my child asks me for something, there isn't the sense of, it's not a transaction. And when my child expects me to do something, it's not a transaction. And when my child, you know, worships me, because I'm daddy, you know, it's not a transaction. It's just the most natural thing in the world. So, if we look at the Ishbitz here, and you know, in some senses, I'm stuck right here. I would say that, you know, not just this week, not just this evening, but this lifetime. This is for me where the rubber hits the road. This is the point of contact. This is the friction where I'm looking at, you know, what is it, who is it that I'm worshiping, and what is it that I want, and how come I am in the emotional state that I am vis-a-vis God. You know, I have to say that this last month, and the war in Israel, and the unfolding of this monster, this Hydra, this Islamic fascism, for me, my life has changed, and there is fear of the future that there never was. I'm 50 years old. I grew up in the shadow of the war, and my grandparents and uncles and aunts were murdered by Nazis, and you know, I thought the world had changed, and I was trying to fit in my image of God, you know, with this changing world, and you know, this the revelation of whatever it is, the peace on earth is coming, and you know, that this the Holocaust, God will explain why it was necessary, but it was necessary as part of the development of peaceful consciousness and coexistence, and I really felt that. I really grew up believing that. I don't anymore, and I feel like there's another one coming, not necessarily directed specifically at the Jewish people, as but the Jews will do, you know, if nobody else can be got at. So I'm trying to understand, like, the world we live in, how do I... So I come across this pasuk this week that tells me, Tomim tia im Hashem lekecha. Rashi says, hey, you just have to accept what's going to happen, you know, but I'm not ready to do that. Then there's this Kabbalistic meaning of Tomim being Shalom, Shlim, that the root of the word is be at peace with God. What does it mean? So then I come back to the Ishbitzer, and the Ishbitzer says, well, you know, where is the child? Where's the child? Where's the child, Hershey, in relation to God? If you lose that, and if you go into this adult thing, it's, first of all, it's not worshipful. It's many things, but it's not worshipful. Because worship means the way a child is. The way you feel when you're talking to your mother. The way you feel about your father. This is worshipful. So this is the feeling that you have to bring in to the relationship, the talking to God, the talking about God. No, this is where the peace, this is where it's being at peace, you know. My children, you know, may have all, especially the big ones, you know, they may have all kinds of issues, stuff that has to be dealt with and processed and so on and so on. But when they look at me, and I look at them, you know, all that stuff isn't there. It's there, but that's not it. That's not the relationship. Those are the things that are trying to mess with the relationship because, you know, I'm not perfect. The relationship is, well, you know, he looked up at me when he was 3 months old, 3 weeks old, 3 days old, and he saw me, and you know, and I was there. These are the eyes that he looked into. If I accepted him or didn't I accept him, you know, the who he is now in his soul, you know, has to do with what he saw in me when he looked into my eyes. How was I seeing him? These are the fundamentals of worship. This is what shapes us as when we grow up, you know. How did I look at my father and how did he look at me? And these are not things that we can even put into words, really, except when they go wrong and there's a pathology or something, then, you know, we can say, oh, this is, something happened, you know, but when it goes right and a child grows up with a sense of self, meaning that the child is still in touch with the divine life, what can you say that went right? I mean, can you explain it? No. But that's the nekuda, you know, that's the essential, that's the fulcrum, that's the... Everything moves on that. That's the pivot of the self and the relationship. And this is what after the Ishbitzer says, when you sort this out, when you get initially sorted out, when you get back to it, So let's look at the previous Torah. Lo yisizbach l'Hashem nekecho shoyer v'seh ashiyah boimum. Don't sacrifice to God when you bring something, an ox or a sheep that has a blemish. You know, we have so many times the same thing over and over again. So of course, this bitza picks up and he says, no, what does it mean to me today? Well, when the Shalma Parms for Seno, the prophet says, let us pay oxen with our lips. We don't need to go into the temple and sacrifice, you know, an animal and cut its throat. We can do all those sacrificial offerings with tefillah, with binding ourselves with our words. So then what does it mean not to sacrifice, not to bring a blemished animal? Zeh posuk mazhir al tefillah. Ki tefillah hu inyan ha-karbonis, because prayer is where we make our sacrifices. Today haynu shelo yispalel odom tefillah la-Hashem yisborach shiyeh boch yisorin mishtus. A person should avoid praying to God prayers that are stupid, silly, and, you know, in any way blemished. So the blemish isn't a physical blemish in the body of an animal, but rather a blemish in the kavana, in the intention that with which we approach God and we speak, or a blemish in the relationship. Shoyer, an ox, roimeis, what is that teaching us? It's hinting kilo yispale lo odam shiyaonesh haveroi. You know, the ox is the paradigm of blind rage. And in the Kabbalah, the shoyer is the totem of Esav and Edom, the ox. And the wild ox in Africa is the most dangerous of the native animals. They kills more people than do lions. Shoyer Reimes. So what does it mean? A person mustn't bring this ox, this wild animal, into his davening. Don't bring this rage, this mindless rage that will attack a red rag, you know? Don't bring it into davening. Not to be davening. Rabbi Shalom, I want you to hurt them, him, it. To bring that part of us that wants revenge, righteous indignation, not to bring that to the davening. Not to say, oh God, you judge, be the judge. Not to wake up the judge. Not to come and pray for the judge. Because the ox hints at that aspect of din, judgment. Seh, what does the sheep hint at? Shelo yokutz ha'odam b'chaim. A person mustn't be sick of life and pray from that despair. Kegoin tefilas yoinav Eliyahu. These were very great prophets. Right? Jonah and Elijah the prophet. What does Jonah, at the end of his, end of the book of Jonah, you know, he prays to die because he was, you know, he'd been sitting under this tamarisk or whatever it was called, and God had smitten the tamarisk with a worm and it died and shriveled, and Jonah was stuck there in the open, in the blazing sun without shade, and he just wanted to die. And prayed from that place. And that, according to Ishbitz, that's the sem, which is got a mum, that's the sheep that has the blemish. You know, sometimes, you know, we can pray from the despair, but that's also blemished. The rage, bringing the rage to the tefillah is blemished. Bringing the despair, bringing the despair to the table, you know, to sit there I mean, just like to bring back from the previous story, it was talking about, you know, relating to God, making peace with God, and bringing that childlike essence, you know. I can't imagine my children talking to me that way, that they're despaired of me. There was, you know, however much we could fight, I can imagine having a really big fight, but I couldn't imagine them, you know, feeling that ever, that I wasn't a father anymore. And Yonah and Eliyahu, who are on the edge of death because of physical discomfort or deprivation or starvation or hunger or whatever, or thirst, they pray, it's damaged. It's not real. It's real, but it's that's not it. That's not the kind of prayers that we bring. So then what kind of prayers do we bring? It's very hard when you're not in prayer to say what prayer is. It's certainly not begging, right? So what is it? You know, one of the things about the Jewish people that I can say without aggrandizing the Jewish people, without making unsubstantiable claims, but this is our genius over the thousands of years, is we have produced some unbelievably creative masters and mistresses of prayer. And wherever we have been as people, there have been people who appreciate it. Just and this is why David HaMelech and his Psalms are still, you know, popular in so many places. The trouble is that we forget, you know, we forget that this art form, you know, this is an art form. Some people have opera and some people have, you know, sculpture and some people tattoo their cows. The Maasai of northern Uganda, we daven. You know, I heard someone was saying that he was a rabbi. I met him many years ago, and he was saying, this woman came to him and said, "Rabbi, you know, I'm really disappointed." He said, what? She said, I went to this funeral. I was a friend, a Christian friend of mine, and we went to the church, and there was a service, you know, and there was this amazing, there were these songs, and like, you know, if we had a liturgy like that, there would be more Jews in the synagogue, you know. It was really moving, you know, and there was these ancient stuff, and it was just like it spoke across the generation. She was going on and on. Can you tell me one? She said, I knew you'd say that. So I brought it with me. I brought the piece of paper that it had the service on, and this is the one that really got to me. It was, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He leads me beside." and she starts to read Psalm 23, right? Number. We don't, you know, we forget, we don't hang on to, you know, because our language has changed and so on. It's hard for us sometimes to remember what it is to daven and what different people meant by that, you know, and how much license we have to daven. But davening for somebody else's destruction or davening out of despair, that's not it. So let's go to this beginning of this week's parsha, Parshas Shoftim. Let's start at the beginning, see how much we can catch up. Top of the page. Shoftim v'shoitrim titen lecho, judges. A shofet is a judge. A shoiter is a policeman, an enforcer, a bailiff, a sheriff, whatever. So you have to put in all your gates. And this is Moshe, before he's dying, is explaining that, you know, we need to have a legal system, a judicial system. We need to have a police force. We need to, there can't just be, we can't rely on everybody's goodwill to run a society. There has to be a law and a way of enforcing the law, and there has to be, you know, a court where you can take your torts and your financial disputes and so on. So that's on the outside. There's another way of looking at it. So Deshpitz says, when we say judge and enforcer, it doesn't just mean out there, it also means inside. A person has to have some kind of legal system in place inside himself. Because Moshe says, and why do you need to do this? You need to do this in order that you live. And inside us, we also need a system so that we can live life. Because without a system, when we're in chaos and acting out without any kind of, you know, boundaries, you know, we're not alive. Because things that are done with judgment, in other words, things that are done soberly, they don't get lost and they don't end and they go on forever. Then we say in the Zohar Kodesh, it's written in the book of Ecclesiastes, everything that you have in the power to do, do it. Because there is no action, there's no reckoning, there's no thinking and knowing, and there's no wisdom in Sha'ol, in the grave, where you are going. So the Zohar Kodesh says, what does it mean? It doesn't mean that there's no thinking in the grave, but rather, if you act your life with forethought, then the things that you do will never go into the grave. In other words, the chokhmah, the das, the cheshbon, the forethought, the wisdom, the knowledge, and the action that you put into your life, that doesn't die. So it's a kind of a reading of the verse that isn't counterintuitive. Like we normally understand it to say, look, you do what you have to do in this world, because once you die, there's nothing, there's no action, there's no thinking. That, you know, do it now. No, he's saying no. If you do what you do now, with, you know, if it's well thought out, then it will never die. It won't go down into the grave. So shoyftim v'shoytrim titen cho, the Ishbitz is saying that this idea of the Zohar is here. Because if you have enforcers, and if you have the judge inside you, then leman tichya, then you will live. B'nikan ha'meshesh horos, and so here there are six directives, kineged shit sitrin, which correspond to the six directions of up, down, north, south, east, and west. Detalion b'machshava, which depend on the machshava, which depend on the thought. Shoiftim, one. Shoitrim, that's judges, or one, then there's the enforcers. Leisitu l'cha asherah, do not plant an asherah tree near the temple. Leisokim l'cha matzeva, don't put standing stones to bow down to them. Tzedek tzedek tirdoif, you have to follow justice, you have to chase justice with justice. Leisizbach l'shem, shoreh seh, don't sacrifice an animal with a blemish. And then there's the law of Zokin Mamre, the man who defies the courts. Shoiftim, this is the next term. When we talk about a judge, what does it mean? You know, so often this has a negative, it's a very pejorative, because we all know what it's like to live with a judge, right? But because we've lived with our parents and in a society which assigns blame, we confuse judgment and blame. But that's not really, judge doesn't really mean judge means to rule on a thing, whether it's permitted or not permitted, whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing. The blamer, I don't know where the blamer comes from. The blamer is really the Satan, right? The accuser. God is not the accuser, right? God is the judge, right? And we need to have in Silas a judge. Not the bloody assizes hanging judge of the Star Chamber, you know, but a person who can say, oh yeah, that's good, that's not good. No, no, that don't do that, you know. Person needs to have that just judge in his mind. Also, to know what's permitted, what's not permitted. Should I try and run those red lights, or should I not? We need in Silas a judge to make that decision. Are you going to get caught, or are you not? Are you a danger to pedestrians, or are you not? Shoitrim, then the enforcer, Hanabarotzin. We need to have some kind of impeller or constrainer, some sergeant at arms who can take control of the desires. When the judge inside you tells you this is not good, then we need to have inside us some kind of mechanism that will prevent us from just doing it anyway. And you know, this is something we all struggle with, right? You know that your rational mind tells you don't. This is not going to benefit you. And yet, there's something inside us that still wants to do it. And, you know, who cares about the consequence? You know, who cares about the... it's a victimless crime, and so on and so on. But, you know, the heart still wants to just transgress. A person has to have in his heart the power to enforce the heart and the desire to follow the dictates of the rational mind. However it can be made to do that. I know for myself, whenever I see a box of cigarettes on sale, which means every time I go into a store, into a gas station or whatever, they have these point of sale, right? My mind says to me, Heshi, you know what? You can probably, after 20 years of not smoking, you could probably... No, don't go for the cigarettes, Heshi. You're a cigarette addict. Don't bother with cigarettes. You see that fat cigar there? That will probably do it for you, and you wouldn't get... You wouldn't get it, you know, like my mind starts to tell me what I need and how good it would be and how, you know, my rational mind says, Heshi, you've been there and there's no safe way of using tobacco that you've thought of, and you've tried sticking it up your nose, you've tried inhaling it, you've tried chewing it, you've tried, you know, I won't go into the different ways that I have invented of trying to use tobacco safely, unsuccessfully. So, at moments like that, it brings it really home to me, you know, just how this Ishbitza here, like, this is life. And we all of us have this on a daily basis, right? Whether it's the second cup of coffee or that second donut or whatever. I know that for me, one of the things that I do is I pray. I say, God, please just let me pay for my groceries and get out of here without buying anything else. And then I let my feet carry me out with my groceries. And then I get out and I breathe a sigh of relief, because I know that it was a kind of crapshoot, you know. Knowing me, it's a miracle. I walked out of there without cigarettes, right? And every day is not a miracle. It'll do. I'm happy with today's miracle. I don't need a guarantee for tomorrow, right? However you figure out, whatever your stratagem is, that's the shoter, that's the enforcer that you need, who works together with the shofet, the judge. If you can just walk away from that sin because you love God. Fine, fine, great. You don't need any enforcer, right? But if you can't walk away from it, tell yourself, you know, Heshi, you're going to feel so much better today if you, or tonight, if you don't eat that tray for chocolate, you know, if you don't eat that forbidden food, you're going to feel great later when the craving is worn off. You're going to feel good. But if you eat it, what are you going to do? You're going to feel terrible. So, if you can just do a mitzvah and avoid the aver because you love God and you're obedient, fine, fine, great. If you can't, try and trick yourself into staying on the right side of the law. B'chol sho'arecho, you have to put it in all your gates. What are your sho'arecho? What are your gates? Haino ha'tavis, these are the desires. You know, gates, we think of gates as being places you enter into, right? But they work both ways, right? Once the gate is open, it's not just you filling your desires, but your desires then flood out. Nishvatecho, to your tribe, hainu kaladeus hamistafim, we don't just have like a desire, hunger, lust, or whatever it is, but we have whole tribes of desires that like are the children of this. Well, let's continue. Shoiftim b'chol sho'arecho Hashem l'kecho nesin l'chol shvetecho. I need to put judges in all those gates that God is giving you to your tribes. Sho'arecho ayin elasis shoiftim b'chol prat. Person has to like treat every detail of his life in a certain way. B'chol medina b'chol ir, like as though in every, if you are a country. And you have different regions. You know, you have the north and the south, you have the hilly region, and you have the seashore and so on. You have to think of yourself as, no, what works here, there you need the mounted police, and there you need the police on motorbikes. Right? And that's how it is in every soul. Sho'arecho, your gates. What are the gates? The gates are the seven gates. Sheben nefesh, sheben odom mekabel toivah. There are seven gates in the face. Bein beis einayim, two eyes. Beis oznayim, two ears. Beis nikvei af, the two nostrils. Ki ba'af, gam kein odem mekabel. Because there are pleasures to be had and things to be received through the nose as well. Ki bein riach eze dov ha'shayach loy. Because there are things that we need to smell that really belong to us in the deepest place of who we are. Upeh, and the mouth. And so we need to have on each of the different kinds of sensations and pleasures and tastes that we experience, we need to have cheshbon. We need to have responsibility. And then lishvatecho, to the tribes, we know that there are 12 tribes, and the Ishbitzi says that refers to the 12 koiches sheba'odam. These the 12 different aspects of the soul, which are talked about in the Sefer Yetzirah, which are associated with the limbs of a person and the organs. Shemashpia behen, like we use our hands and our legs and our mouth and different parts of our body. Yeshmen niglois, yeshmen historis, and if you learn the Sefer Yetzirah, you find that these are basically, you know, the fundamental blocks of the microcosm and the macrocosm. Beis yudayim, two hands. Beis raglayim, a gvir, the body, the feet. Hem koiches haniglois, those are the obvious ones. Koved morat chul, dakin v'kevo. Then there are the liver, the bile, the spleen, the intestines, the more the kidneys. Each of these refers to a different thing in the body, like laughter, crying, walking, sleeping, eating. And each of these hidden organs of the body is connected to a different thing. Like we have a tradition as koev, koved koev, that the liver is responsible for anger, And up until, you know, modern times, you know, doctors would talk about somebody being liverish, you know, that somebody was in a, had an irascible sort of temper and it was cantankerous, a bit of a grouch, right? So a person needs to be judicious about how they get angry, not to get angry unless, you know, that's what God needs from them. And we associate laughter with the spleen. And you know, we need to be careful not to laugh at people, you know, when to laugh, when not to laugh, and so all of them. Shoftim v'shoitrim, judges and enforcers, v'edikduki hadin. These are the particulars. K'mo d'isa b'masechta Ovis, as we learn in the Ethics of the Fathers. V'zeh koshi mo'id l'odam n'kaimon. You know, it's very hard for a person to know what is right and wrong. Because the truth is, you never know what's right and wrong for you until you screw up. You know, what do we know? Everybody is a, you know, what's good for him is not good for me. You know, the kind, he can get angry and then walk away from it. I get angry and then, you know, I'm looking at the wreckage of my life. You know, I mean, how can you know? How can you know how to lead your life unless you screw up, right? I mean, what do we learn from the things that we get right? From the things that we do right? The answer is we don't learn nothing. You know, when I'm something of a painter, right? When I do a painting and it goes like really smoothly, I don't learn anything. But when I do a painting and I look at it and it's, oy vey, what a mess. And then I learn something. And the same thing is with everything that we do. If you keep getting things right, you don't learn anything. You get something wrong, there's lessons, oy the lessons. So how can we have a shofet? How can we have a judge and a shaitan and an enforcer inside us if we don't even know what's right and wrong for us? Because to be able to be a chochem, a wise person, hey, that's not easy. The only way that a person can lead their life in such a way that they don't have to make every mistake in order to get it right, is if they have that chokhmah mevureres inside them already, if the person inside them has certain elements of truth, if a person is centered in a certain way, then yeah, you can make the judicious decisions and choices without having to have the experience of having made the wrong choices. So the Ishbit says, no, how do you do that? So he said the four elements, fire, earth, air, and water, of which we are, our personalities are made. You know, the Ishbits are still living in a time where doctors would talk about somebody who's sanguine or phlegmatic or, you know, I forget what the other ones are. Hey, how fast we forget. But the idea that there was red bile and green bile and black bile, and you know that each of these colors, green, red, white, and black, were the four humors of the body, and that a person could be, you know, sanguine or could be, you know, phlegmatic, or if you know you had phlegm, that meant that you were phlegmatic, and each of these is responsible for different mood, the different humors. And, you know, a person could be born under one of these four signs, either an earth sign, an air sign, a fire sign, a water sign, and then depending on how these four elements are mixed up inside the body, what quantities and, you know, what permutations, that is what would dictate what the personality of the person is. So, Lishbitz says, if you are in charge of the four elements from which you're made, then when it comes to make a decision, you'll make the right decision. So the Ishbitzer says that's the meaning of this of these four instructions to the dayan, to the judge. The first thing the judge is told is Lo Sata Mishpat, don't bend justice. In other words, you know, if the law is the law and you're the judge, then that's your job. Don't say, I'm going to find him guilty because he's rich. I'm going to find him innocent because he's poor, because anyway the rich needs to give money to the poor, even though that's not really right in this case. That's a perversion of justice. If you're the judge, then you have to say no. If the poor man owes the rich man money, then you have to say yeah. That's how I find, because that's, you know, he owes him the money. Don't look at he is rich and he is poor, right? A person mustn't have a bias. So where does bias come from? In order to make decisions as a judge that are divested of bias, you have to be not governed by your desires, which means that you have to be in charge of the yisoid ha-mayim, the water inside you. Because of the four elements, water is the lowest one. Water is the one that we experience in the stomach, and that is the seat of all our desires. So if you are in charge of your desires, then you are going to make good decisions about moments where you tend to be swayed by your bias. And that's why the Torah says, Lo Sata Mishpat, don't bend the law. The second one is Lo Sakir Ponim, don't recognize faces, don't give special considerations. And this, the Ish B'Tzah says, corresponds to Yisoida Ofer, Kamesh Metzinim B'Gemara, Koivish Ponim B'Karka. Interesting, the Ish B'Tzah makes a connection between earth and the Gemara tells a story about King Yanai, who had a slave who killed somebody. So they wanted to judge the king's slave. So at that time, the head of the Sanhedrin, his name was Shimon ben Shotach, so he said to the Chachomim, he said to the sages, there has been a gross miscarriage of justice here. This slave killed somebody and he's walking scot-free because he's King Yanai's slave and he feels that he can act with impunity. Let's try him. So they sent a message to King Yanai. They said, your servant has been charged with murder. So he said, okay, try him. So they sent back a message saying, no, you have to come because he's your slave and you're responsible. So King Yanai, this is King Janus, right? He wanted to, uphold the law. So he came to the Sanhedrin. He came and sat down there, and they said, Shimon ben Shetach, he liked to live dangerously. He said, no, King Yanai, stand up. Because when we hear the testimony, it's not just about the slave, it's about you, because he's your property, so stand on your feet. So, you're not standing in front of us, you're standing in front of God, the judge. Okay. So King Yanai said, you know what? Let me see whether your colleagues feel the same. Let's see what they have to say. So the king turned around and he looked at the sages, and of course they all buried their head in the earth. You know, oh, it wasn't me. I didn't say nothing. I didn't know, Your Majesty. You know. And then he turned around the other side, and all the sages on that side fell on the earth, right? And they buried their head like, you know. So Shimon ben Shadrach, who was this head of the Sanhedrin, was so disgusted by their behavior, their craven attitude, that he called down from heaven on them. He said, what kind of thinkers are you? What kind of men are you? You know, and let the owner of all thoughts and all men come down and take punishment. And the Gemara says that the angel Gabriel came down, and it's hard to know exactly what happened, but it wasn't nice. From that time, the Sanhedrin passed a new law that a king cannot be tried, he cannot be called as a witness, he cannot bear witnesses, like, you know, very different from the impeachment process that we have in the United States, where the president is just, you know, doesn't have powers not granted by the Constitution and so on, it was realized that that's a fiction, that even if it's true, it's still not true, because there are political considerations, and so we better make a law that the king can't be called as he can't be tried in court, and you know, and so on. So the Ishbitzin says we see that there is a connection in the Gemara between recognizing a face and hiding your face in the earth. So there's the four yesoidus, which is called earth, is connected with recognizing your face. So the judge must never look out at the court and say, you know what, that person, he has an honest face, I believe him. Yeah, that guy over there, he looks like such a liar, right? The judge must be free of faces. Loisakir ponim, the person standing in front of him just has to be a person. And, you know, the judge is not there to say, oh, he's a handsome man, he's ugly, you know, therefore. Loisakir ponim. And that part of us which we have to be in charge of in order to be like that is the earth part of us. Loisikach shoychet, then the third one is do not take bribes, which is neged yisoid haruach, which this corresponds to the yisoid of air, shezeh oiseh lo neicha, because there's a certain spiritual thrill, I guess, to be had from taking a bribe. There's a kind of it's like the act of breathing, where the lungs do whatever it is that they do. The Ishbitzin still uses the old model of how people understood what the job of the lung was before people understood the circulation of the blood and so on. The job of the lung was to like wings on the heart, to make the heart feel rested or whatever. What do we mean when we say don't take bribes? We don't mean to find the innocent guilty or vice versa. Because that comes under the rubric of lesata mishpat, don't bend the law, right? Leisikach shoychad is when you get paid for judging the way you believe you should be judged. Right? So when you think somebody is guilty and you're going to find them guilty, and then somebody comes along and says, you know, there's some money if you find them guilty, and you take the money, that's shoychad, that's bribery. We're not talking about finding the wrong person guilty or finding the wrong person innocent. No, shoychad is the act of taking money. You know, how does a din Torah work? An emes din Torah, two people come to the Rav and they say, we have a dispute. And the Rav says, well, do you both agree to be bound by my judgment? They say, yes. They both of them give their stories. Then the Rav says, okay, I have a decision, pay me. They pay, they both pay right there on the spot before the decision is made, right? They both pay equally, you know. Because the Rav is doing a job, isn't it? And then he says, "No, now do you accept my judgment?" And they say, "Yeah, we accept your judgment." Then he gives the judgment. I mean, a person, if he's a judge, he has to be paid. But there's a very fine line about how the payment should be done. You know, the Gemara tells a story about a man who was listening to a case, and he kept on feeling he kept on feeling drawn to the argument of one of the, he kept on feeling, oh, he sounds right, you know, even though the argument didn't sound right, but he sounds right, and he was very disturbed by it, and he came Rosh Chodesh, and he went to Davin, and he had a special coat for Rosh Chodesh, and he put his hand in the pocket, and there was money in the pocket. So the man had tried to bribe him, but he couldn't bribe him, so he'd gone to his house and put money in his pocket. And the Gemara says, so powerful is bribery that even though he didn't know about it, it was affecting his judgment. This is Yesod HaRuach. It's a spiritual thing. And then Tzedek Tzedek Tirdoif, Zeh Yesod Esh. Justice, righteousness with righteousness. This is fire. Shemechale Shara Yisodis, because fire is the one that just burns through all the others. Beinamanich lispash lisgaber. And you know something? Sometimes righteousness is the most destructive of all of the elements of justice. And that's why it says tzedek, tzedek, tirdeif. Pursue righteousness justly. And you know that can mean jettisoning the law. Because sometimes, you know, we have in English, the law delayed is, what's the exact word? Well, if it takes too long to come to decision about what the decision is, about what the law is, like, it's justice denied, right? If it takes you 30 years to reach a decision about who did what, you know, in the meantime, somebody died of old age, right? Oh, but we need the truth, and no, not always. Tzedek, tzedek, righteousness sometimes means something else. And it's when you pursue it righteously that it comes through. Leman tichya, in order that you live. What does it mean, in order that you live? Tavoyu lemekur chayim. It doesn't just mean that you live, but there's an essential life force that you connect to. Yirashtem esa'oretz, and you inherit the land. What does it mean you'll inherit the land? Why do we need to hear? Here, there are so many times the Torah tells us that I'll make the rain fall, you'll be prosperous, you know, what does it mean? You'll inherit the land in association with justice. It's because the land represents spreading out, expansion. If you can absorb all this constriction that you need to have in place in order to be a good judge of yourself, right? The result won't be a constricted personality. On the contrary, it will be a person who is able to be expansive.